Zoom meetings bring you
Phoenix City.
And welcome to Phoenix City for another week. We are on week two of remote records. We have almost a full complement of podcasters, but we are missing a Frosty, so I am taking over hosting duties again, much to everyone's enjoyment. Dave is here.
Chagrin.
That's the word I was looking for. Dave is here, as you can hear. Cam is here as well. Cam is currently coughing.
Good evening.
Is that a little bit of the COVID-19 going on there, Cam?
I'm sharing it with this mic that I got off Dave, so when he eventually gets it back, it's all on there for me.
That was good coughing technique, though, right into the elbow.
I have two children, man.
Yeah, very good.
It's like you can't help yourself but cough, right?
Yeah. And Ella is here as well. How are you doing, Ella?
I'm good, Pat. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Shall we just jump into...
I'm not used to seeing... This is quite weird, though. I'm not used to seeing Ella without glasses on, so this is quite unusual, especially when it's over the internet and stuff, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, I do have them here if you get confused.
To be fair,
I can take mine off if that would help.
Yeah, that's better than Pat's a standout.
We're all now ditched our glasses. I can't see anything. I'm going to put those back on to make sure that I don't mess up the recording. It's weird for me because I've obviously edited a bunch of these podcasts but never actually seen Ella during a record. And when I was back at Christmas time, Ella wasn't on the podcast because I think you were back at home. So last week was the first time that I had seen Ella during one of these records. So it's all very, very strange at the moment. Very strange world. Speaking of which, the A-League, very strange times of that. We spoke last week about how it had been postponed and there's been no movement on any dates or anything like that there. But the kind of the big news of the week for the A-League is that clubs, starting with the Perth Glory and moving on to a few others, have started to stand their players down, I believe, without pay. Is that correct?
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, that's what's been reported pretty widely.
Started with Perth Glory and Tony Sage. And then Central Coast Mariners have also announced that they've stood their players down. There is widely held beliefs among the footballing media in Australia that the Wanderers, Adelaide and Brisbane have all also stood their players down, with West United and Newcastle about to do the same. PFA, obviously, not happy about it and have kind of warn some of the clubs about the obligations. Interesting times. Who wants to jump in on Tony Sage and the way that he kind of jumped out first and announced it in a way only Tony Sage could do?
I think it's an interesting one because, the comments from Tony Sage certainly implied that there's been discussion between the clubs and the club management about this and that they all kind of were in agreement, is essentially the way he put it. You would think if that was the case, this would have come a bit more as a united front. But clearly there is maybe a level of agreement, but some points of difference between clubs that they've decided to do this in their own ways. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It's good to see the PFA finally stepping up and really having a view on something, because I think we've hinted at it before on the podcast, and obviously others have as well, that the PFA have a pretty big role to play in terms of the player welfare stuff. And they seem to be largely absent from that whole discussion around when the Phoenix were, going over and going into quarantine and the league was still carrying on while all of this was kind of kicking off. And they seem to be pretty quiet. But here, as soon as there's an issue with pay, they're extremely vocal, which I'm not saying they shouldn't be vocal, because I think they absolutely should. I mean, they're there to fight for the players' rights. But it's surprising to me how silent they were on other issues that I would have thought they would have been equally vocal on. But this isn't a big surprise. It's the reality for a lot of workplaces out there. It's just a bit more high profile in this case. I mean, you look at companies like Air New Zealand and all of that are standing down huge portions of their workforce. This isn't really any different. It'll just be different in terms of what that collective bargaining agreement says. And the fact that the FFA keep hinting that they still want the season to be played. So kind of releasing players from their contract, which is in essence a little bit what this is. It's going to make it very difficult to get any of those players back to finish off this season.
You make some good points there, Dave. I think we kind of have to look maybe at this quite pragmatically, in that if there are the rumoured issues with Fox that we've talked about previously, this could be the only feasible way of keeping the clubs in existence. Because that wage bill is massive.
You'd think, though, by standing them down, they're certainly exposing themselves to some other costs. You'd think there will be payouts as part of that. You can't just terminate a contract with no reason. So I would say there will be some money involved in that. And they're also potentially, I mean, if the way the PFA are talking is to be believed, they're opening themselves up to legal action as well, which might be more expensive than if you just kept them on until the end of their contracts. So it's hard to know how much money this does save. Obviously, it's a play to try and save some, but whether it succeeds, who knows? I mean, it may end up costing them significantly more.
Contracts usually run through to the end of May in the A-League, don't they?
Correct.
Yeah. So
we do have a lot of players contracted beyond this season, though.
Sure, that's correct. Good point. Yeah.
What the implications are for multi-year contracts is hard to say. The implication of standing them down without pay is just that it's kind of put into a suspended state, but it may actually be that they're trying to terminate these contracts. Say this is an exceptional circumstance and we are terminating the contract.
Well, that's what the PFA has warned against. They've come out and said, I saw it briefly when I was researching, that almost all these players might become free agents as a result of this. So clubs won't necessarily hold on to them.
Their argument will be around, essentially, it's a breach of contract. By not paying them, you're not fulfilling the obligations of the contract.
So therefore
the
contract
becomes void.
Mm.
Yeah. Which might be different from how the club's lawyers are viewing it. It's hard to say. But it certainly is going to be an interesting one to see how it plays out. And I think, obviously, the clubs are worried about the financial impacts. It should tell you all the stuff that's kind of been speculated about the TV deal, both by us, but also in the media more broadly. There's you know, fire behind that smoke. How big the fire is, who knows? I mean, there's certainly suggestions that Fox might be trying to bin the entire deal, which would be interesting. But also whether or not it's just the season they're trying not to pay, which would also have big impacts. I mean, there's a range of possibilities there, and obviously the clubs are worried about it.
Also, the implication New Zealand, the Phoenix being based in New Zealand, there's New Zealand legislation around employment that we have to worry about, which means it may play out differently for these guys than it does with the guys in Australia as well.
You can imagine there's
similar law, you know, that's stuff like the wage subsidy here, which obviously doesn't come anywhere close to how much money these guys are probably earning, but it is still, you know, stuff that the club could be applying for on behalf of people, and, you know, there might well be different arrangements just by being in a different jurisdiction.
And our redundancy rules and stuff like that are completely different compared to what they are in Australia as well. So there's lots of things to work through if this does happen to impact our club.
Well, there's been no talk of it hitting us yet. And that list that I've read out was from Australian media, albeit, who might not have the same connections to the Phoenix. But imagine at some point they'd be looking at it at the very least and using that wage subsidy to subsidize, for want of a better word.
Yeah. And I mean, the rumors on social media certainly include us as well. You know, the fact that they're only on social suggests the sources may be less strong, but that's not always the case. Sometimes those sources are in fact better. So I think it's a strong possibility that we're involved. Or will be taking similar steps at some point soon.
Ella, do you think this has wider ramifications for what the league will look like when it comes back in whatever form it does?
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well it's going to impact how the sport as a whole looks and what the clubs look like in terms of how they support their women's teams, what happens to the W League as well. Like, it was the W League is kind of absent from this variation of the conversation because the league's finished a couple of weeks ago, so it's kind of, that's all done and dusted. But you kind of think, there's talk about expansion, talk about kind of what happens next. If the clubs are right now going, well, how do we even exist? That's just going to push out those conversations and those discussions further as well.
Just do it, Cam. Cam's trying to open a beer really quietly, and he's done it incredibly silently.
Succeeded.
Cam. Well done. Is that a
That's because I put the microphone down on the arm of the chair quite a long way away from where
All
I was.
All right, I see. You were just trying to sneak away with that beer, but I've made a very
This is my point, this is my COVID-19 lockdown coping technique for living with two little shits.
I feel like I'm missing out because I think as the host, Pat, you get a better view of everyone. I can only see one person at a time, so I would have missed that entirely.
So you need to go. You need to turn on gallery view. You've got to turn on gallery view.
I've got this little view along the top, which shows me.
I don't have any button for that.
There's like a little drop-down menu. I think near the top right of your screen should be gallery view. You want that?
I've only in browser version, so that might be my
maybe.
Problem.
Yeah, I'm getting very well versed in Zoom meetings across this period of time. This is probably one of the most.
I've had more online meetings like this in the last week than I've had in my entire life.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah,
like exponentially more. I've done maybe one prior to this week, and this week it's like I've done about, I think I've averaged two a day.
The thing with
I
me,
genuinely feel like I've lived my working week on Zoom.
The thing with my Zooms is that none of them are
rubbing in that you're working, guys. I mean, geez.
I'm not working. Mine have all been like
unemployment
fun.
Here. Come on.
So yeah.
Those have all been D&D games. We know it.
I cracked a 9-hour day today, mate. Just an FYI.
There we go. I had a Zoom call with the UK yesterday morning, they were all drinking because, of course, it was the evening over there. And I went, you know what? Fuck it. And I finished off my bottle of Pinot Noir because that's the vibe we're on at the moment.
Day drinking. There's no such thing as a bad day drink.
Well, especially at the moment. I saw a quote today saying that 12 p.m. is the new 5 p.m., which I'm on board with. And somebody's not working.
I saw another one today.
Yeah, I can accept that.
I saw one today, you think it's bad now, in 20 years, people around the country are going to have been homeschooled by day drinkers.
Oh, yeah.
That's us.
Yeah. Well, I'm not homeschooling anybody. It's just you. It's just you, Cam.
Yeah, and that's going well.
Speaking of questionable homeschooling tactics, Tony Sage has in what can only be described as an old person Facebook attempt, a technology faux pas, posted on one of the articles about him standing all his players down, a letter in the comment section, probably. Letter is the closest thing. Addressed to Tony Sage, signed by Alan, and Tony Sage posted this, which made it look very much like...
And then replied to himself, which is the part that made it particularly weird.
Thanks, yeah. Alan. It very much looked like he had... got on one of his burner accounts. Yeah, taken a leaf out of Mark Rudan's book and got himself a burner account and posted it.
That's why you were bringing this up.
No, I'm bringing it up because it's funny. Yeah. But it appears...
It was funny.
It appears...
I mean, it was reasonably clear it wasn't that quite early on, but it, yeah.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't a good look for him. He could have managed that a lot better.
Even still, he's...
Particularly after, like... talking up how he was going to, you know, sell his club to a cryptocurrency to then be unable to work Facebook is not ideal.
Yeah. He then posted a screenshot of the message from someone called Alan, who he had decided to copy and paste that message to back himself, to like defend himself on a random SBS Facebook page. So even that is like, he kind of has got away with it because everyone's going, well, that's not as bad as the other thing. But he's like trying to defend himself via other people's messages himself. It's just a very strange like victim complex he has going on here. I don't quite understand why he's doing it.
I mean, his mistake is answering it on Facebook at all. I mean, we've seen that with partners of Phoenix players before, that it doesn't necessarily go well when wading into any of the Facebook chat about your club. Like, it's best just to stay away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Cam, you're a bit active in some of those Facebook groups, but I avoid it for the same reason. Some of that discussion is just not worth getting involved in, and it's not even about me. I can't imagine how bad it would be if it was about you trying to wade in and explain yourself for something that no one's ever going to care about your point of view, particularly they're just there for, you know, carrying the pitchforks in some ways.
So as well as the club standing down players, FFA have also announced, I think this was kind of late last week after we recorded, that they're standing down 70% of their staff, which you imagine would have ramifications for when the league does come back in the form that whatever it does come back in, it would be potentially harder to run. I know that running the A-League is only one small part of what the FFA does, and they have a lot in terms of like the grassroots football that's not happening at the moment, all that kind of thing as well. But for them to massively scale back like that is a big indictment on how troubling this is for the sport in general. We haven't heard similar things from New Zealand football yet, but imagine similar talks will be going on. They're quite lucky that they're a smaller organisation, or that does come with smaller amounts of funding, obviously.
Well, and New Zealand football and the federations are quite different things. I mean, again, we haven't heard this as some sort of thing from the federations either, but the pressure's got to be on at a lot of levels of football over here as well in terms of keeping people employed. Obviously, the government's helping a lot with that, but there will be implications the longer this drags on, you'd think, around some of those roles that are really... I think some of the operational stuff can continue, but the really like football hands-on-y stuff, you know, coaching, development officers, all that kind of stuff, it has got to be hard to maintain when you literally can't do 80-90% of what your actual job is. So obviously the government funding will be helping, and I'm sure New Zealand football will be trying to get hold of whatever funds they can from central government to feed down to the federations. But the longer it carries on without a season starting and without any football being played, it's gonna have impacts.
There's no talk of an end date at all. Like, we don't even know how long we're going to be in the level four state playing football afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of assume that just the season's not going to happen at this point, wouldn't you? Like, I've sort of heard from a a few friends playing a different federation, so kind of resigned to the fact that the season's just probably not going to happen.
That's the realistic angle to take. We go from level 4, we go down to level 3.
We go from level 3 to 4
or go down to level 2. These things aren't going to happen in a couple of days. And take, for example, they've closed the schools. To get all the kids back into school is not just a simple you turn up on Monday. There's all the planning that has to go into redistributing all of the work that they're supposed to be doing in the period of time they're away because, you know, homeschooling isn't exactly the easiest thing and most parents aren't trained to do that sort of shit. So it's not going to be a simple snap and you're done. These guys, once they know when they can go back, they have to work out all the competition stuff again. So how many games can you physically get into however many weekends you've got left, running the risk the fact that this could close down again really, really quickly?
Yeah.
They can still be doing some of that stuff remotely, and I imagine that they are. The problem at the moment is the unknown factor. They don't know. They can't put a plan into place because they don't know what's going to happen. I'm sure they're coming up with a whole bunch of contingencies, but until you know which one you're rolling with, you can't do anything.
Yeah, well, I can speak for Capital Football because obviously being involved with the club, we get some comms around that, and obviously we've had some communication this week, which I can tell you the level of planning there is exactly that. It's planning for all the contingencies. So an email was sent around to the clubs kind of saying if we're able to start on May 2nd, which is where they have officially delayed to at the moment, here's how the rounds will work. Then they've got dates for 1st of June, 4th of July, 1st of August, and, you know, various other dates in between, saying if the season was to start on the 1st of August, here's how we would play it and when the season would potentially end. So they're certainly having those discussions. But like you say, Cam, the unknown is going to continue for a long time. And I think even if at this stage, this far out, you're going, okay, August might be doable, what's actually doable when we get to August might be very different from what looks doable in August right now, because you may still be operating under completely different restrictions, and you just don't know what that looks like. So obviously there's some planning going on around that. And hoping we will still be able to play a season. But I think there's a very realistic possibility that with all the planning in the world, we still don't play any football this year.
Yeah, and I think I can see that flowing on to the A-League as well. With the discussions that are out there at the moment about New Zealand holding a border restrictions until a vaccine has been developed for COVID-19, that could be another year from now. And in that situation, you don't get the A-League played. Unless you can some way get exceptions for international sportsmen. I've seen that discussed today elsewhere as well, mainly around rugby and the impact it would have in New Zealand without having the revenue that the All Blacks would bring from, you know, fair enough. But it would still exactly the same issue for New Zealand football, exactly the same issue for the A-League in general. So, yeah, there's lots of things here that no end date, which is not going to be known for a long time. There's a lot of issues there that that's going to bring up.
I think one of the saving graces there is that whatever happens in terms of sport generally, rugby's the big player, obviously, but there are the Warriors and the Breakers who also exist, and the Phoenix can be lumped into a general conversation with all of them. So it's not just the Phoenix going out to fight for themselves. It's all the Super Rugby teams, the All Blacks, the All Whites as well for the home-based players. All of them will be lumped into one conversation together, which I think can only help the Phoenix. The Phoenix by themselves aren't probably the biggest player and not really on the radar for the government to work something out for, but combine it with the entire professional sport and rugby in particular, all of a sudden it becomes much easier to negotiate those things. So I think that might be the way where the saving grace there is.
Yeah, and I think those teams you've mentioned there, the Warriors, the Breakers and the Phoenix, are all in a slightly unique position in that they could base themselves out of Australia for a season. I mean, it obviously would be a very bizarre circumstance, but we saw it with the quarantine period. We saw that it's something that the FFA and the league were willing to consider, and obviously the club as well. So that could be something you're looking at there, where something like Super Rugby, with the number of nations involved and the number of teams from each of those nations, that wouldn't be a feasible possibility for some of those competitions. But those ones that are a single New Zealand team in an Australian competition would all be in the same boat, and it would be an interesting prospect to see the Warriors, the Breakers and the Phoenix all base themselves out of a facility somewhere, do some joint cost sharing kind of stuff and training facilities and all that. Could be interesting and could be feasible.
The problem there is
weird, but possible.
The problem there is you still run the risk of going to a country that, to put it bluntly, isn't handling the crisis as well as New Zealand is, and runs the risk of people getting sick. And we saw that happen this week, where one of the Phoenix staffers came back and tested positive for COVID-19.
Absolutely.
Now, we don't know whether they caught it over there, or whether they had it from here first, or none of that's been discussed whatsoever.
No.
But on the balance of likelihoods, and the time frames.
Absolutely.
They probably caught it flying over to Australia to play football, and well, not necessarily play football, but to go into the isolation camp to try and play football. That's, I mean, we said it all along, didn't we, that it was absolutely ridiculous that the Phoenix were being put in that position, and it would probably end up with somebody getting it, and they have. And
well, and we talked about a player getting it, and it's no surprise that, you know, players have been confirmed with it as well now, and, yeah, and coaching staff. I mean, this was, as far as we were concerned, guaranteed to happen. It was just a matter of when, and it has happened. So, yeah, it shows how naive might not be the right word, but how troubling it was, the decision to try and proceed under the circumstances that they did, because it was never going to get through like 6 weeks or whatever they seemed to hope of football before it was a problem.
Well, the other issue you got now is that it's coaching staff. They've been in isolation with the squad for a long time. All of those players now are running the risk of, you know, they have been exposed. They've got every chance that they're going to have it too. And the people that they're now in a bubble with, they've got a chance of being exposed to it too. So all because of the steps that were taken when they didn't necessarily need to be, a la Fox.
Yeah.
It's the flow-on effects of this, because it's so contagious, the flow-on effects are so large.
Yeah. And
I mean, it makes it even more stupid, the situation with the players breaching that quarantine, because of exactly that reason, though. I mean, they certainly didn't need to be doing that, and obviously, you know, there's been some reasonably contrite statements made about remorseful, you know, silly mistakes. But the reality is there was some real risk to what Tim Payne and that were doing, that, you know, they shouldn't have been putting the members of the public in that position either.
Yeah, so you're talking about, just to specifically state what we're talking about, Tim Payne and Oliver Sale leaving their isolation to go out on what has been described as a drunken joyride on a golf cart, which under any other circumstance I would find hilarious. But under this circumstance, not so much. To break that self-isolation and to give yourself the risk of picking something up. And as it turned out, to pick up the risk of giving it to somebody else if you have been in contact with it. It's just to do that when you're in 2 weeks of isolation, and that's just dumb. That is the worst thing you can be doing.
Luckily from the reports we have, it sounds like there wasn't a hell of a lot of contact with members of the public. It does sound like there certainly was some contact with some police officers, and potentially they were taken to the station. There seemed to be some dispute over whether or not they had been arrested, but I think it sounds reasonably clear to me they did go to a police station. But, you know, it's all pretty concerning that certainly members of the public saw them and they were the ones who called the police, but it doesn't sound like there was too much close contact happening there. So in some ways that's very lucky, but man, this could have been a hell of a lot worse. And yeah, there would have been a lot of egg on faces. I think it's one thing to talk about the position that, you know, the players were put in by the league and, you know, the situation, but it's a whole other thing to then be kind of wanting that sympathy while you had players going out and breaching exactly that.
Yeah. And it only weakens any argument that Phoenix might have in the future to go into a similar situation where if they say that we can go and put ourselves in isolation and play out a season, someone would be within their rights to say, well, you tried it and you couldn't make it 2 weeks without some of your players breaching that.
Yeah.
No, you cannot compete in the A-League. The A-League's continuing, but you're not allowed to leave the country or things like that. So it might have further ramifications still. But yeah, I have no time for this kind of, as someone who's been in self-isolation for the last 2 weeks, like without being able to do anything, it's shit. It sucks. Like I can't go to the supermarket. That's shit. But the fact that these guys then go out and breach that to make it like not worthwhile for anybody to be doing it, like that's just, yeah, I have no time for that. In saying that, I don't think they should be sacked either. I've seen some comments on the internet that say that these guys should be sacked and they deserve to lose their jobs over it, blah, blah, blah. But it's not that level of misdemeanor yet. And these are guys who haven't had any priors before. And it's certainly in some areas of misconduct and that kind of thing. But I don't think that you should be sacking people, given that it didn't go as badly as it could have, over one incident like this. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts.
Just to play devil's advocate, because I also kind of agree largely that they probably shouldn't be sacked, but I can see the argument why they could be and why the club might go that way. And it, you know, the fact that it didn't go as badly as it could have wasn't really down to them. That was just dumb luck, really. There's nothing to suggest here they tried to not have contact with the public. I mean, they're riding around shirtless in golf carts, you know, drunk, in public streets, and had gone a number of kilometres away from where they were based. You know, there's nothing here to suggest that the fact that it wasn't a hell of a lot worse was anything more than dumb luck. And everyone knew how serious the situation was. You know, it's not just breaking, you know, drink driving laws, which it sounds like they will be Tim Paine will be prosecuted around and has court dates for, from the sounds of it. But they were breaching immigration rules and a range of stuff there that were, you know, pretty strict controls that have been placed around them being able to be there at all. And you even look at the fact that immigration in both countries pulled a lot of strings to get them home. And this is the night before they came home. Those strings were being pulled at that exact moment to try and keep these guys in the best possible situation. And you're out there breaking laws. Like, I can see the argument why you might call this, you know, a serious breach of confidence or a serious, serious misconduct that could cause, you know, terminating the contract. Ella, I don't know that that's the right solution here, but I could see it happening.
Ella, what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, like, as we all said, like, it's just so dumb what they did. It does kind of make me wonder, though, like, how, maybe seriously isn't the right word to use, but like, how seriously was the whole that side of the situation maybe being seen within the squad? Like, on the one hand, it does sound kind of hilarious, or the Phoenix are being, you know, sent over to isolate for 2 weeks before maybe being able to play in a competition. Like, at what point does that sense of this is all just a bit ridiculous and no one can take this seriously, at what point is that maybe filtering into the camp? Like, despite best efforts to keep everything as professional and as business as usual as possible, surely at some point, like, people are starting to go, this is stupid, like, and start losing the plot a little bit.
Cam?
Oh, and this was exactly that point, because the season had been postponed. That's what had happened, yeah. And they were going to fly home. This is the night before, and clearly the squad as a group were going, well, at the very least, we have a few weeks off.
Yeah, we'll have a night out.
More likely, they're thinking, we're not playing the rest of the season. Let's have a few drinks. And yeah, Surely that's when the kind of jovial kind of atmosphere came in and started taking it a bit less seriously. But yeah.
Yeah, Pat, I have actually nothing to say about this.
Sure.
On record.
Fair enough. You didn't need to say that on record part. While I can see that, I said that I don't think they should be sacked. I think that this will seriously affect their ability to pick up further contracts with the Phoenix. Because you look at these guys and you go, they're good players, but you've done this and you put our club at risk. And do the Phoenix want to bring that back in? And we've seen it with players before where their attitude off the field has impacted their ability to pick up new contracts. And I think that's the way in this offseason. I can't remember, is Tim Paine contracted for next season?
Yeah, he negotiated his contract. Right. It was over the new year, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, he like renegotiated it himself, whereas obviously the others would use agents and stuff. So like, again, that kind of seemed for him to go and do that.
Yeah.
The draw, that seems just even more ridiculous.
Well, now that players are potentially being stood down and that kind of thing, it puts him in a bit of jeopardy. Not saying that the Phoenix would do that. I don't know. I like to think that the Phoenix would do what's best by their players at all times, and if that is standing them down indefinitely, that is what it should be. But it's not a smart move. Yeah, probably enough said there. Should we move on to the next item on the agenda, unless anybody has anything else to add about the A-League at the moment and the way that it's been paused? Nope. We'll move on to the next thing, which is the very sad news this week that Radio Sport, which I'm sure all of us have listened to hours and hours of it through our time, I know I certainly have, has sadly been shut down very, very suddenly. It was broadcasting, and then all of a sudden it was off the air. Twitter accounts were deleted for it, and it's now put a whole lot of people out of work, which is incredibly sad news, but probably a little bit of an indictment on the way that this crisis is affecting the media in general, especially around sports.
Yeah, that's fair, man. It kind of hits home a bit more when you know, like, the people that are working there as well. Like, obviously, all of us on here know at least one person that's going to be directly impacted by this. And it's, it kind of drives it home a bit more. I used to listen to Radio Sport all summer long, listening to the cricket when I was a kid. And I used to tune in at work and listen to Piney in the mornings as well. So it's not, it's like literally within the last week prior to the close down, I was listening to him chatting about sport. So it is quite a jarring change. But again, it's not a surprise that this has happened. Obviously, they were having issues with getting, I think, broadcasting rights for things like the cricket and stuff like that. So perhaps there was already a cash flow kind of issue going there with the shutdown and with print media, for example, not selling at all because no one can go out and buy it anyway. Everyone's gone online. That kind of eliminates a revenue stream for the owners of the station. They're probably looking at ways that they need to cut to save that cost. And if this is already bleeding money, I can see why they've decided to cut.
I think that's the thing. is that it already was bleeding money and that they were already looking to shut it down at some point, but it's kind of just hastened that along a little bit.
It's kind of just an indictment of the direction that sport media in New Zealand in particular, but I guess kind of globally as well, the direction it's been going in anyway. Like, you know, you look at, you know, obviously in Australia with cuts to the sort of shutdown of AAP, in the UK, like kind of any kind of sports media organization, the majority of contributors are going to be freelancers. They're not hiring as many permanent staff anymore. You look at kind of the depth of coverage, you know, within New Zealand particularly, it's kind of all sort of top level. There's no regional, local sport in our major news outlets anymore. It's just kind of hastened the direction that it was kind of already going in.
And I imagine this will have flow-on effects. I was listening to, I don't know if any of you listened to Between Two Beers podcast, with Simon Holloway. I was listening to a little bit of them before we jumped on the recording. He was talking about how, as a sports journalist, he just has no work at the moment. He's a little bit luckier that he's employed by one of the major news outlets, but he still has no work at the moment. He can't do anything. And for freelancers, that just compounds it.
Honestly, like, I know this is like mildly self-interested, but I'm just so glad that the W League kind of is done and dusted of its own account, because obviously, you know, I was doing a fortnightly thing for that. And as soon as that goes, you're kind of like, well, I don't know what to do. I was talking to the editor a couple of weeks ago and he was like, you know, obviously, if you've got any pitches, like, hit us. We just don't know what's what. And I'm kind of like, yeah, there's nothing to kind of go with, because just everything's so no one knows and there's just kind of nothing to actually do.
And it's not just hitting the sports, it's any entertainment, really. Like, there are no movies coming out, for example, beyond what's been put out on Netflix. And there's no, for me, my self-interest, there's no theatre happening. There's no jobs going in theatre. There's no, all the freelancers and all the actors and everything like that. Even on big scale shows, they're just all out of work completely. And it's...
Most people in my industry are exactly the same.
Yeah.
The number of photographers who have lost work because of things like weddings getting cancelled and, you know, events are being cancelled. There's no sport on. All the guys that work in my field, exactly the same thing.
Yeah, so it's not a unique thing to sports media, but it is potentially being seen because of the visibility of it. Sport's a big thing in this country, and Radio Sport had a large listenership, potentially bigger in yesteryear than it does at the moment, and that's why it's been shut down. But it's a very visible way, and when all of us follow a bunch of those guys on Twitter and know them personally and have them on Instagram and things like that, it's much more of a shock to the system that it's happening now. But I guess it makes sense. It does make sense. It makes financial sense, but to happen so quickly is what's sad about it.
I think in many ways it'd be easy to say that this has been an excuse for something they planned to do anyway. I mean, you look at the cricket and how they hadn't got the rights to that. They clearly weren't pouring in the same kind of investment that they had previously. But I think it's probably a symptom just of like even the fact that we're here talking about football, you know, that kind of really in-depth stuff has moved away from, you know, being the sports journalist bread and butter. And it's why, you know, you don't get that really in-depth regional coverage anymore. It's national level only. And it's, to be honest, it's mostly pretty top level match reports. You know, that's not to say there aren't some really good sports journalists in New Zealand, because there absolutely are. But they don't necessarily get the time and space to do that really good in-depth sports reporting they used to. Now it's very much the media cycle is churning out stuff as quickly as possible. And these days with, you know, being able to stream video and, you know, churn out stuff very quickly, there's an immediacy to what they need to put out. And it's, you know, it's a 30-second highlight package and a description of what happened, because anyone who cares about it in that in-depth way is going to consume that media elsewhere. They're going to go find the match on demand to watch themselves, or they're going to go to their favorite podcast and listen to it, or, you know, somewhere else. And you look at stuff like the ACC and the success of that, the kind of traditional, we're just going to broadcast a game of cricket and commentate on it isn't necessarily as in demand, because there's so many other options and the barriers to entry are essentially non-existent that in many ways, anyone can kind of do that. It's getting hit first. And I think, you know, as more and more of that stuff, you know, you're talking about there being less movies and less theatre and stuff, you know, you look at the way the reporting on that's going as well. It's podcasts, it's new media, it's bloggers, it's influencers, it's all of that same stuff happening there as well. It makes it harder and harder for the media to be making a buck out of it. And so they're going to invest less and less in reporting on it. And eventually it's not going to be justifiable anymore. And so it was always coming. You know, Radio Sport, I'm not saying it's the part of that business that's bleeding the most money, but it certainly isn't kind of generating the most revenue either. It's one that they're not going to see big growth in. It's just going to be a slow trickle down until eventually it goes away. With no sport happening at all in the country and around the world, you're going to have to stand down sports journalists pretty much first. And what's left for Radio Sport if you're sanding them all down. So they've taken the decision to stop it. And, you know, they obviously in their kind of statements, it's an indefinite stand down, but there's kind of a hint of maybe it'll come back one day. But, you know, you don't delete the Twitter accounts and all of that when you're realistically thinking you're bringing this back 6-12 months from now. I think
just let them go
it's
silent.
Gone and it's really sad. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think if they'd said, hey, we're taking it off air for the next 30 days and we're going to reassess it every 30 days, that would have been one thing, but instead, the way they've gone about it says to me, it ain't coming back.
Yeah, you don't pull all your staff into a meeting.
The reasons it's not make sense, but it's sad. It's a big, big loss.
Yeah. And to touch on something you said about a minute ago now, but I wanted to grow on it, is that as those media reporting on sport and entertainment and theatre and all those kinds of things die off, it becomes much harder for those elements to get their name out there and cut through.
Yep.
As they're all turning to that internet age of marketing and Facebook ads and that kind of thing, it becomes much harder. And the print media still has a game, still has a way through there. And you look at the back page of the Don Post, there's always a Phoenix ad there when there's a game coming up. And if we lose more of those things, it becomes much harder to market things. So that my example is it's very hard to get reviewers along to shows these days because there's just not that many out there. The Don Post aren't hiring people who go out and review things anymore. And that has an impact when you want to try and get funding for your next show because you don't have quotes from a reviewer and things like that. And same thing will happen to football. As it starts to disappear, we see that as 3 News and 1 News in that order start to drop off, sorry, other way around, drop off their Phoenix coverage when things aren't going so well. Phoenix all of a sudden don't have that level of awareness anymore. And that has a big effect on the crowd sizes and things like that. So it's something that the sport in general has to be worried about. Beyond just moving to podcasts, like we're quite lucky. Yeah, we have a very engaged listenership on this podcast who are right up our niche, but a lot of people don't have that following or don't have that ability to tap into people that they want to talk to directly, easily. And especially now when there's so many podcasts out there that if you're creating something new, it's got to have some sort of point of difference. Otherwise you're just not going to get people to listen to it. So it's becoming much harder with all the move to the new media. Lots of nods from everybody there.
Yeah, I mean,
doesn't go across very well on audio medium, does it?
That's why I kind of made sure that everyone knew that they were agreeing with me. Yeah,
absolutely.
I
don't think there's a good answer, but it just is a reality, and
especially
people and businesses and whatever need to adjust. And hopefully, you know, some of those fantastic sports journalists and stuff, because they really are extremely talented, and losing them entirely from the kind of industry of sport will be a huge loss. So hopefully there are some smart people and some smart businesses and whatever out there who can find ways to keep them on board and keep that fantastic, you know, content coming.
Well,
do we potentially see a migration of that talent to the sport organizations or the clubs that they were kind of more closely associated with anyway, potentially? Like, is that, if kind of the media and sort of content model is kind of moving more towards clubs and sports producing their own, do they then latch onto that talent that's already existing, that's already got those skills and expertise, and that's kind of where it goes? And then the mainstream media, as and when and if it decides to go back into sport, how does that then kind of reshape how it engages with sport? You know, who does it, what stories does it want to tell? Does it go beyond match reports and like kind of drop that side of things a bit more? Because the clubs are doing that anyway, right? And if you want to see what's happening in a game, you just jump on Twitter and like everything's just there. So it's kind of saying, okay, that stuff's being covered already. What's that next level? What's that next step? It's kind of that next layer of coverage.
I think actually, to a degree, that is possible. I think they're more likely to do it on a contract for service basis rather than as an employee basis. Yeah. So literally just put them on a retainer and say, hey, we need you to do this amount of it, this many hours for us over this period of time. And so it is possible that they could do that. It's hard to know until we come out the other side of this and know what kind of shape all of the sports organizations actually are in, because there's going to be a lot of them are going to go bust. There's going to be a lot of organizations, a lot of clubs that can't survive because they just don't have any cash, you know, and they don't have the cash flow to keep these things going. So until we come out the other side, it's hard to know how we can speculate beyond what you've just said.
And on that happy note, I think that's the pod for this week.
Real uplifting time, team.
We've done a good job of giving everyone a bit of escapism.
We two have lockdown.
Yes, we've hit rock bottom. Downhill.
Honest to God, just be happy you don't have kids, man. Honestly, just.
Oh, I'm very happy.
Happy relieved. Right now.
I'm so happy.
I mean, I was happy about that beforehand. I'm happy about it now. I mean, yeah, this is just my life.
This is selling to me birth control. I'll tell you that.
Well, it's an essential service, isn't it, birth control? So,
fuck yes.
What? what are we going to call the boomer babies in 9 months' time? Well, what's that going to be?
Zoomers.
The Zoomers.
The Zoomers, man. Because Zoom has obviously had a massive spike at exactly the same time. Or Coronials was the other thing.
I mean, that's not exactly good.
You don't make a baby over Zoom, Cam.
No. This may have been part of Cam's problem, as he had some major misunderstandings about the process. Yeah,
100%, yeah. That's my issue. But no, yeah. Coronials then. There you go.
Two kids, you've had two Zoom meetings before this week, so maybe that's where the two kids came from, Cam.
Yeah, sure.
Who knows? Anyway, thank you for listening. We'll wrap up there before we go down too deep a rabbit hole. We'll come back to you next week. We'll see what happens in the world. We've floated the idea of potentially, Cam?
Questions. Throw us some questions. If there's anything you want us to cover...
Oh, there we go.
Throw us the questions on the... if you're on the Patreon, throw them on there. Otherwise, send us DMs. Pat's got other ideas as well, but that's a decent one. So if there's anything you want us to cover, just throw it out there.
Yeah. We're also thinking about watching some old Phoenix games and talking about them. Obviously, there's been a bunch of archival footage floating around on Sky Sport and Spark Sport over the last kind of 2 weeks or so since all the sports stopped, but we thought we'd watch some old Phoenix games. Have you got any Phoenix game in particular that for whatever reason you think would be good for us to talk about, compare it to what's going on now or reminisce over those players who used to play for us, hit us up.
If you guys pick one that we lose in, we're not watching it. We're not doing what these other two boys do on a regular basis.
Preferably wins.
Yeah.
Wins are really good.
Only wins.
Really good games. Yeah.
I'll take Gold Coast 6-0 and Victory 5-0. Anything along those lines, quite happy to take that.
I want to disagree with you guys. I think these should be pivotal games in Phoenix history. So if it's a loss, like if it's the hand of pain, I'm willing to listen to that because that was a pivotal moment in Phoenix club history. I'd be willing to watch that again and talk about it.
All right, we'll take these discussions off air.
Just a random loss. Like, suggest us a game that actually mattered to the club.
Yeah, we'll take these discussions off here. We'll talk about them. Message us on Twitter.
You're asking
or Patreon
for suggestions, Pat. Come on.
Yeah, I am. From them, not from you. We'll wrap up for there for this week. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to end the circus here. Good night, everybody. Goodbye. Look at that, Frosty. That's how you wrap up a fucking episode. Brings you.
Coronials bring you.
We love Radio Sport. Brings you.
Sage comments from Sage. Brings you.